themselves out differently in different situations. And therefore, this topic
is not one that one discusses halacha lemaasa in anything but very individual discussion. It's different from hot plates in that regard. And that's what we say at the outset, that this is not a situation where we discuss halacha lemaasa. Nevertheless, it becomes very important to understand the issues and to learn together the issues that are the underpinnings of something which obviously is a very important part of our lives. It's interesting to note that Rav Moshe Feinstein, many, many years ago, wrote a tshuva about family planning, and it was a tshuva in response to an article that was written in English. And he wrote a preamble to the article, to the tshuva, by saying that he was upset that the discussion was published in an English publication. That he thought that the issues of the family planning come under the category of what the Mishnah says in Chagiga, that these are things that are not to be discussed in public. The Mishnah Chagiga says that certain very sensitive issues, primarily issues that relate to families and men-women relations and things like that, should not be discussed publicly, because something which is discussed in a public situation, by its very nature, people will lose the trend of thought. People will hear that the nature of any kind of public discourse, any kind of teaching, in any kind of setting, so that people often miss a point here or there. So when it comes to an area where a person is very emotionally invested, so we're concerned that when a person fills in the blanks, they'll fill in the blank in a way that is more appealing to them. So therefore the Mishnah says that certain things should not be discussed in public. So Rav Reisher writes that he was surprised that anybody would publish an article about family planning in an English journal that was open to the wide and breadth of the of readership. It's the kind of thing that is supposed to be discussed in the tshuvas and again in conversations that are very focused on halacha lemaasa and very focused on discussing each detail accurately. On the other hand, that many years ago as well, in the early 80s, Rav Schechter published an article on family planning, and much of what we discuss is based on that article, in one of the early copies of the Journal of Halacha Contemporary Society. And the background of that article was, I believe it was Yaakov Kamenetsky, was concerned that people were not fully aware of the possible leniencies. In other words, one of these issues which has is a sort of a pendulum, it goes backwards and forwards. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was concerned that in the families around where he was, so couples were not aware that there are different levels of the obligation of procreation, different levels of the obligation of pri v'ribia, that there are different times and different situations which allow for certain leniencies. So he thought it was very important that a person of a Shechter stature should write an article in English that people should be aware of. That's an issue that has to be discussed with the Rav. It's an issue that wherever one is holding, if one has any concerns at all, it's something should be discussed and formulated as a shaila. And this is a pendulum kind of issue. After the Second World War, Rav Yaakov Reisch, who was one of the great gedolim in Switzerland, so he wrote that we should pursue large families with a vengeance, because we have to replace some people that were lost. And that is still the thinking of almost everything that was written after the war. And then Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was concerned that there were families that were Baruch Hashem having many, many children and were under great stress and duress, and therefore he advocated that we should push the pendulum a little bit back in a different direction. And again, it's the kind of thing that goes backwards and forwards. I think now certainly I see with the younger couples, that I'm referring to younger couples that are just finishing up in yeshiva and just getting married, that they sometimes take for granted that that all forms of family planning are permissible, and they sometimes think that there aren't any significant restrictions. So it's one of these things that goes backwards and forwards, and it's important to discuss it, understand the background of the issues that are involved, and by doing so, realize that it's an issue that shapes our thinking and something that has to be discussed from time to time and form it as a shaila. One of the major changes, it's fascinating from the just to see how issues affect society and have a tremendous impact on halacha as well. We will divide our discussion into three parts, and that's why it'll span both this week and at least next week as well. First, we have to discuss the mitzvah of pregnancy, the mitzvah of having children. And then, and that's always, whenever a question is raised about family planning, it's always divided into two or three parts. The first part is the mitzvah to have children, the mitzvah to have a family. Then the second issue that comes up is a specific din of hashchos hazera, of having an unnatural form of relations, or of letting semen go to waste, or destroying semen. In other words, that even in a situation where the mitzvah of Pirvibya may be lapsed, one may be able to postpone the mitzvah of Pirvibya, but there's a second area of halacha that has to be analyzed, so how would we postpone the mitzvah of Pirvibya? What are our options? And that's the issue of Hashchos HaZera, that all the forms of contraceptives which have physical barriers, so they get us involved in the issue of Hashchos HaZera, and the needs that are being looked at not only have to be a strong enough need to allow for the lapse of Pirvibya, they have to be a strong enough need that would allow for the violation of a concern of Hashchos HaZera. So this whole area of halacha underwent a major change with the advent of the pill. Just like the pill had a major change in society at large. So in terms of halacha, there were almost no, if any, tshuvas, any response in print about family planning per se. There was nothing about spacing, nothing about postponing. The only things that were in print were issues of if somebody's not well, if a child may not be well, if a pregnancy may not go well, because the major discussion that was being discussed was when can we permit Hashchos HaZera? When can we permit an unusual form of having relations? When can we permit a non-natural approach to the usage of the semen of the zera? So that was the entire conversation. There's nothing to talk about postponing or spacing, because that never would cut the threshold of which would allow Hashchos HaZera with the advent of the pill. So then the conversation, and it's also now with the advent of being able to focus and predict ovulation, it's even a more recent phenomena, that we're able to figure out somehow when ovulation is taking place. So it would be conceivable to be able to skip ovulation, that kind of, with some kind of accuracy. So it's only after the pill came on the scene that Poston began to focus on the issue of procreation and taking a break from the mitzvah of procreation without having to rev up against the Hashchos HaZera. That's it's an interesting and very, very noticeable change in, or I wouldn't say change, but notice the development in how Shuvas were responding to. It also, the pill had a significant impact on our Hashkafa, on the way that we think things out, on the way that we look at things. Because in all of these areas of halacha, one of the major issues which halacha has to focus on, and which is the third part of our discussion, and that is the Hashkafa, the outlook that we bring to the halacha, there's always a balance of so many areas of how much bitach one has to have, and how invasive one gets, and how much does one plan and try to shape different aspects of life, different events. So as history goes on, the area of bitachon becomes smaller and smaller, and the area of ishtavos becomes greater and greater. In other words, as we advance, for example, in the area of Rachman al-Tzan, a person is not well, So whereas years ago there was a huge area of bitachon and a smaller area of ishtal, only certain things you could do. Now Baruch Hashem, with so many more refuels, so many more therapies that are available, so the area of ishtablos, where we have to do our effort and work, and that has become much broader in the area of bitachon, where we simply lay back and do nothing, has shrunk. Our bitachon is a different kind of bitachon. It's a bitachon that while we're doing all the ishtablos, so we have bitachon. It's a different kind of bitachon. It's not a passive kind of bitachon. It's an active kind of bitachon. The same thing with parnasa. When life was simpler and there were limited ways of making a parnasa, so a person, there was a certain expectation of how hard a person would work, and then after that, we were b'teach v'Hashem, with the pace of life having picked up so much, and there were so many different avenues, and there's so many different, so there's so many longer hours that a person could work, so the area of ishtadlus has sort of pushed aside an area that we normally would have bitachon. The same thing happens with family planning. As long as there's no pill, so the alternatives are so limited, there's much more room for saying, Haboteach v'Hashem, we have to be talking, we have to do, we function in our world, and trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu will work things out for us. With the advent of the pill, so then they became the area of ishtadlus, so to speak, the opportunities that were open to us, the avenues available to us increased. And again, that is assuming. That's assuming that a person is comfortable with a pill. I would never insist that a person has to make themselves comfortable with a pill. That's a discussion that everyone has to have with a doctor and do their own research. So the first part of our discussion is the mitzvah of the mitzvah of procreation, of having children. And interestingly enough, we began by saying that this is an area that is not, we don't discuss Piskei Halacha, so to speak, in large groups. It's an area where Piskei Halacha are discussed only in a one-to-one, in a situation by situation. But if there's another reason why this would not be the scenario in which we discuss halacha l'masa per se, and that is because the mitzvah of procreation, the din d'oraisa of procreation, is incumbent upon men, it's not incumbent upon women. The Gemara says, and the Rambam paskens, that the mitzvah of peribya is anoshim mitzuvos, when women are commanded. Men are commanded, women are not mitzuvos. Women are mitzuvos on the mitzvah of shevas, according to some, on the mitzvah of a drabbanandik mitzvah, rabbinic mitzvah to help populate the world. But the mitzvah deraisa, the such a significant, the very first mitzvah that we got, that Kadosh Baruch Hu records, I should say, the mitzvah having children was not incumbent or is not incumbent upon women. It's a strange thing to say because it doesn't really have a significant impact in this area whether a woman is obligated or whether she's not obligated. In practice, it's going to be the same thing. Women, if not obligated, Kadosh Baruch Hu created nature in such a way that women are a necessary accomplice to the mitzvah of Pirvei Ribya. So it doesn't, it's really more of a hashkofa issue. There's a very beautiful Meshech Chochma, Rabbi Simcha Mitzvinsk, writes, he says, why is it that a Kadosh Baruch Hu formed the halacha in this way? So the Rabbi Simcha points out that he says, this is just the way that we have to look at a Kadosh Baruch Hu put together his system for us. Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the natural system and runs the legal system. He runs the world and he runs Torah. So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, when it comes to having children, so he made men obligated by his legal system, by the mitzvah, by pasuk and chumash. He made women obligated by his natural world. It wasn't that Kadosh Baruch Hu the significance of a woman not being mitzvah. Sometimes it has significance that historically it had significance that. You all know that in areas of Taras and Mishpacha, so women have accepted upon themselves chumras many, many years ago, the time of the Mishnah, that women accepted upon themselves to be strict with all forms of any kind of the sighting of dam, any kind of riyah, and to treat oneself with the stricter rules of zav as opposed to strict nida. So Chassam Sefer points out that this, why does it say Nashim Nechmir al-Asman, women accepted this upon themselves? The Chassam Sefer says for this reason, because men would not be obligated to adopt communally any chumras in areas of Taras Mishpacha. Because a chumra in Taras Mishpacha can often mean a softening of our fulfillment of obligations of Pribi Rivia. So a woman who is not mitzuvah from the legal part of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's world is able to say, well, out of my concern for Taras Mishpacha, I will accept certain chumras, and that women can do again as a community. But the Meshech Chochma points out that again, it's Kadosh Baruch Hu working his huge world. So, and he says a very beautiful idea. He says the reason for this is that the legal part of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's world, the halacha part, so there a Kadosh Baruch Hu is always very careful that the halacha should present a certain imus, a certain gentleness, a certain sweetness. Kadosh Baruch Hu's halacha is always an even, balanced system. Gemara says that we don't eat in Yom Kippur, so there's a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. Gemara says that we send people into battle and make it very, very tough for them and put them in the most trying conditions, so we relax certain of the Yisurim when it comes to Eishes Yifas Tohar. Gemara says that Kadosh Baruch Hu said we can't eat liver, we can't eat the blood, so Kadosh Baruch Hu said, but I'll eat liver, so you have the same kind of hanoah apparently as having very, very rare kind of meat. So the Gemara says, so Rav Simcha says, the Meshech Chochma says, Kadosh Baruch Hu, before the chait of Adam HaRishon, said Puravu, says that the mitzvah of procreation could have been equally placed upon men and women. But after the sin of Adam HaRishon, after the chait, and then the Kadosh Baruch Hu said that nature is going to change, how will nature change that be'etzev tel libanim, that having children will be something that is terribly painful for women, that having children will be a sakonas nefoshos, it will be a life, it will be placing oneself into a life-threatening situation. So Kadosh Baruch Hu couldn't put in his Torah the inconsistent, to say there's a mitzvah to have children, and there is, and I'm obligating you to put your lives in danger to keep my mitzvah. That's inconsistent. So therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu decided that the mitzvah of having children, the part that he communicates to us as a mitzvah, as a almost the Sifri Chassidus say, as almost a detached commander, that's only placed in men. That which the Kadosh Baruch Hu placed in his in nature, he placed a nurturing tshuka, a nurturing interest in women, a natural proclivity, inclination, a natural love of raising a family, having children. So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, "I'll give thee my legal obligations will come through the Torah that'll be placed on men. I will accomplish the same thing for women." But I'll give that in a different way. I'll give it in a more loving way, in a softer way, so that the entirety of Torah is a maintains a measure of consistency. The importance of the mitzvah of Pirvei Rivia is underscored by several halachas. It's one of the only mitzvahs that one is allowed to sell a sefer Torah for that mitzvah. A person has a sefer Torah, and both for men and for women. That if for some reason, in order to be able to work out a marriage, let's say, one has to spend, in order to be able to marry off one's children, whether it's a boy or whether it's a girl, in order to be able to find a companion, the only thing one has to sell is a Sefer Torah. So we say that for most mitzvahs, it wouldn't sell a Sefer Torah. For the mitzvah of getting married, if one happens to have a Sefer Torah, one would even be allowed to sell a Sefer Torah. That underscores the importance of having children. We learn at the very end of Melachim Aleph, that when Achav, who was seen as a Melech Rasha, Gemara says that in Achav's time, they had an Avodah Zarah Mechol Telem Otelem on every single hilltop, and every single there was an Avodah Zarah that Achav put into place. So he was one of the most, when he's compared to Yeravam ben Nevat. So Achav, when Ben Hadad, Melech Aram, the king of Aram, came to Achav and said that he added 32 kings to move against Achav, and he said that if you don't give me your family, your wives, and you don't give me all your money, so I'm going to move against you. So Achav said, all right, I'm willing to give all my money up. I'm willing to give all my wives, probably several wives. So probably the wives that were Pilagshos, concubines, he was willing to do that. The Malum says a little bit softer. The Malum says that was different ways in which Achav, it was a metaphor for Achav's monarchy. That how was monarchy expressed? Gemara, the Chumash says that a king has lots and lots of money. Gemara, Chumash says a king has lots and lots of wives. So Ben Hadad was saying that I want to depose you as king. So Achav said, all right, I'm not going to go to war against 32 kings. I can't do it. I have 7,000 soldiers or something. 7,200 soldiers. So then Ben-Hadad saw when Achav caved in, Ben-Hadad said, I want kol machman einecha. So then Achav says, that I can't give you. So what's kol machman einecha? So what is left to the Malbim for a king? What else does the king have? He has many wives. He has many other money. He has a Sefer Torah. No one else has a Sefer Torah. You want my Sefer Torah? So that's Achav, who was compared to Yerubim, could not consider giving up a Sefer Torah. The importance of Fivir Ribya is that we would sell a Sefer Torah in order to get married and have children. And the same thing with leaving Eretz Yisrael. One of the few situations where a person is allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael is in order to get married, in order to raise a family. And it's seen as it is the first mitzvah Kadosh Baruch Hu recorded. And the mitzvah itself, as we all know, is a mitzvah which makes an individual a shutuf with the Ribbono Shalom. We say all the time, there are shlosh shutufim, there are three partners in the creation of all people. So this is not just a god, it's not just a phrase. There's a very deep idea involved in saying that procreation makes people partners with the Ribbono Shalom. To my mind, it means that in all our service of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, we are shutuf with a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And if I want to buy an esrog, I'm a shutuf with a Kaddish Baruch Hu. If he doesn't want me to have an esrog, I won't have an esrog. I can spend hours and hours trying to find the kosher esrog. If Kaddish Baruch Hu doesn't want, it's not going to happen. I can spend hours looking for matzahs. If Kaddish Baruch Hu doesn't want, I'm not going to have those matzahs. That's what we say whenever we do a mitzvah. We say shechayonu v'kimonu v'giyonu. We thank the Kaddish Baruch Hu for allowing us to do this mitzvah. Pirbi Ribya is when it's so clearly shown to us that Kadosh Baruch Hu is helping us do mitzvahs. Kadosh Baruch Hu is determining if we do a mitzvah. We want to do a mitzvah. So what can we do to have a mitzvah? We can get married. We can have chibur. After that, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to determine that. The mitzvah of having Pirbi Ribya is having a boy and a girl. A person could do all the ishtalos that's in the person's power and can have Baruch Hashem many, many girls. It wasn't the kind of mitzvah. Many, many boys. It wasn't the kind of mitzvah. So when it comes to Pirbi Ribya, the halach is that if I have a boy and a girl, and Rachman al-Tan, these two children don't have more children, so I was Mekayim Pirbi Ribya. I'm only Mekayim Pirbi Ribya, nothing I can do about it, but I can only be Mekayim Pirbi Ribya if my children also have children. And then, and I have a boy and a girl from, I have a boy and a girl from from both of my children. Right? Both of my children have to have children, and amongst the grandchildren has to be one, at least one boy and one girl. So, when it comes to Pirbi Ribya, the mitzvah is something where when we say Shlosh Shutzim V'Odom, there are three partners in the creation of everybody, the Ribbono Shel Olam, the father and the mother, what we're really saying is that this is the mitzvah, the very first mitzvah Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us, is really a kaleidoscope through which you see all of the mitzvahs, all of life. But when it comes to buying an esrog and eating matzahs and lighting Neir Shabbos, so we delude ourselves into thinking that we have a tremendous amount of control. And maybe Kadosh Baruch Hu will get in my way sometimes, right? When it comes to Pirbi Ribya, there we can't delude ourselves. There's no deluding oneself. There, it's very, very clear. And we think about it and we see it. So that's the idea of Shlosh Shutzim V'Odom, means that a Kadosh Baruch Hu used Pirbi Ribya as a kaleidoscope to teach us how all of life and all of our avodas Hashem. So that's the mitzvah of Pirbi Ribya is so important. The question that usually comes up is that not that a person doesn't want to have children. The question that usually comes up is that a young couple wants to postpone having children. So why should that be a problem? What should be the issue in postponing having children? Again, that's what we're saying. The first part of the discussion is just the discussion of the mitzvah of Pirbi Ribya per se. What could be the problem of postponing having children? A person says, I'm going to have children. I'm Yirtzeh Hashem. We're 19 years old, 20 years old. Yirtzeh Hashem plan to live at Neiv Esrim Shana. We plan to have many, many years where we can have children. But not this year, not next year. Right? That's the... So what is the what could be wrong with it? So we have a rule called the Zrizin Makdimin LeMitzvahs. The mitzvah is Zrizus. Zrizus means that we are excited to do the mitzvah, that we do the mitzvah as soon as possible. The mitzvah of Zrizus comes from Mila, from Bris Mila. It says that we always do Bris Mila first thing in the morning. Why first thing in the morning? It would be much more convenient to do Bris Mila let's say during a summer day when you can do it before sunset. So do the bris milah 6 o'clock in the evening. Have a dinner bris. It'll be much more convenient. Have a late afternoon bris. Why do we have to do it first thing in the morning? So the Gemara says that we have a rule, Vayashkem Avram Baboker, that Avram, when he went to do the Akedah, first thing in the morning. That's the mitzvah's reason, Makdim L'mitzvah. It's the first opportunity you have to do a mitzvah. That's a strange thing. Is it one of the Targum mitzvahs? Can you find somewhere it's listed in one of the 613 reasons Makdim L'mitzvahs? How would you categorize it? What does it belong to? Is it a mitzvah? I can't say it's advice. That's just advice. So it's an interesting category. It is a heder mitzvah that the Rabbanu Shalom asked us to do. Right? It's not a separate mitzvah. When Rosh Hashanah time, when we learn the Rambam says that when it comes to Yom HaDin, so Kadosh Baruch Hu said he measures our averus and our zechuyos. The Rambam doesn't say he measures our averus and our mitzvahs, our chovos and our mitzvahs. He measures our chovos, our lapses in what we've chesronos and what we didn't do, and our omissions and our violations against our zechuyos, our merits. So I think that's what the Rambam is pointing out. There are many, many merits that are not mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are part of our zechuyos. Then there's another, there are many zechuyos that are not formal part of mitzvahs. There are many, many chasodim, that are many good things that we do, many nice things that we say that would be very hard to fit into, to box into a specific mitzvah. On the other hand, the zirizin makdim in the mitzvahs, that's a zechus. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, if we show our excitement that we're doing a mitzvah, our readiness to do a mitzvah. So that's a zechus, and that's a positive aspect of our service to Kadosh Baruch Hu, one that the Rabbanu Shalom takes into account, and one that creates a stronger relationship, just like if a child is zorvis to do a parent's concern. If one friend does another person's concerns, takes care of his rizos, so it creates a stronger bond. There's a stronger relationship. So if we do a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs b'zrizos, that enhances our relationship. So at least having children as soon as possible, right? The whole issue is one of the areas of halacha does not fit into the general box and pattern of mitzvahs. Why do I say that? There's no other mitzvah, to my mind, no other mitzvah which begins after, which does not begin at Bar Bas Mitzvah. Right, every mitzvah starts at bas mitzvah, bar mitzvah. The mitzvah of kibud Shabbos begins at bar bas mitzvah. Hadlakas haneros is a specific way of fulfilling kibud Shabbos. So that specific way of fulfilling kibud Shabbos begins when a person sets up a home. But in fact, it doesn't begin when one gets married. If a child is away from home, they should also make the mitzvah of hadlakas haneros. So it really begins at bar bas mitzvah. So what happened to Pir B'Rivya? This is one mitzvah, again, where Kadosh Baruch Hu communicated via the natural world, that it doesn't begin at Bar Bas Mitzvah, that it begins, the Gemara says, maybe at 18, maybe at 16. We assume it begins a little bit later. We assume that the mitzvah of Pir B'Rivya and getting married is always an ongoing balance between one's readiness for getting married. So the Gemara says in their time, readiness was at 16, was at 18, in the Machlokas. The Gemara says that when waits past the early 20s, then it's all over in the midst of Pir B'Rivya. So the Gemara said at that time, that's when one was ready. And if one waited too long, it means that one wasn't committed to the mitzvah. Nowadays we see things much, much differently. We see that one may not be ready till well into the early 20s, because the Rambam describes that the mitzvah of Pir B'Rivya is always balanced against the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. That a young man should be learning until he sets up a family. A young man should be learning and getting a parnasa until he gets married. So the Chazal understood how long does it take to get a parnasa together. So in the Gemara's time, a person was 18, to get a parnasa together, they could already provide for their families. A person was 18, that means a person already had accomplished what they're going to accomplish for the most part in learning. But the Rambam writes, if a person wants to extend that, a person wants to say that I want to learn for many more years, and he's able to maintain he's able to mekai mitzvahs properly, he's not racked with Yehorim Rom, he's not racked with Shuko, so then we allow him to get married a little bit later. So the ideal time of getting married, we do postpone the mitzvah of Pir B'Rivya until one is ready to get married and postpone the marital age. That's the way Kadosh Baruch Hu made the system. You know, so he made that this is a mitzvah which is different than other mitzvahs. It's much more, much greater interplay with the Kadosh Baruch Hu's natural world than most mitzvahs. And then we have a halacha that if a person, if a young man wants to learn more, or perhaps he needs more time to be settled, so then he gets married a little bit later. But once he's ready, right, so then there's a mitzvah. There's a reason why people have mitzvahs. Somebody asked for Moshe Feinstein, this in one of the later volumes, well, Yochum Ellenson, wrote many svarim in this area of halacha, so he asked for Moshe, it's a question that many Rebbeim and Yeshivas get, that a couple is, they are ready to get engaged, ready to have children, but they're not ready to get married, but they're not ready to have children. Again, whatever that means. It could be that both sets of parents have told them for the last 2 or 3 years and I really have children. But whatever it is, but they, parents can sometimes say that we give our blessing to get married, but there's conditions. As Al-Tanai, they don't have children for, sometimes it's for very good reasons. The parents don't see the kids as ready for it. And sometimes it's based on a mindset and on parameters that one sets up for oneself, which may incorrectly not be that flexible. But that's a common question. My parents will let us get married, but they've told us many, many times that they would be upset if we have children. So again, that is always an individual question. Always means you always have to figure out how upset the parents are going to be, how long will they be upset, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, 2 months. You always have to figure these things out. Very often, most usually, grandparents usually cave in very, very quickly. So one always has to figure these things out, not making light of it, but it has to be realistic. And very often these are issues that have to do with the pride of the young couple, that they don't want to be supported. So that also, we'll discuss at a different time, that sometimes times change, and sometimes the nobility of supporting oneself is, I think, is always very, very important, but it could be that within certain situations, certain times, that and with the parents are able and they can and happy to provide, that that should be seen as being flexible. But when it comes down to the bottom line, that you have a young couple, and the way Rabbi Ellenson posed it to Rabbi Moshe, she says the young couple are not gonna have children. So they are asking the following: they're asking you, should they not get married, right? Should they postpone marriage and not have children? Or they should get married and not have children. That's the question, right? That wasn't the young couple is not giving after the rabbi makes his pitch and after he discusses it with them and after he does. Then 3 days later, the young couple says, "Rabbi, this is still the question. We can either not get married, or we can get married and not have children." But that's the so then Rabbi Moshe writes that in that case we should tell them to get married. Because the dangers of not getting married and the avarice that they could get involved with by not getting married would not justify not getting married, and it would justify getting married, and they won't be kind of mitzvah of zrizus. Rav Moshe in that tshuva is very, very limiting on the methods of contraception that are available to that couple. But that's off to leave that for next week. So is that all that's involved? Is it just a din of zrizin matim la mitzvah? So the Chazanish has the following approach. The Chazanish writes, not really in relation to this mitzvah per se, but he has in general. He says that there is two kinds of zrizin matim la mitzvah in Torah. One kind is the one that we're speaking about. I'm supposed to do a mitzvah, do it as soon as I can. Bris milah, first thing in the morning, don't leave it. There's another kind of zrizin matim la mitzvah, and that is that when the Torah does not give a set time for the mitzvah itself, then the Chazanish says, then pushing or postponing the mitzvah is tantamount to not doing the mitzvah. Right? We have the example. The example the Gemara has in Moed Katan, the Gemara says, it's a strange example. It's a person had a tzaras in his house. Right? So the kohen has to come and look at it and see whether this plague is a plague that's tummy or a plague that's not tummy. He has to go to the house. Fine. So the Gemara says that if it is a chasan, So we give him Sheva Brachas, right? We're nervous to kindly go to the house, see that there's a tzaras, and it's very, very new, it's a very new young couple, it'll be terrible. In the middle of the Sheva Brachas, we're going to announce that this kohen, that this chassan and kala had already tzaras, they just got married, they already have tzaras, and then we're going to tell them to empty out their entire house, and they're going to have to replaster. It's going to be a terrible thing. The first 3 weeks of their marriage, to spend it this way. So the Gemara says that the Torah is a special pasuk that says that the Kohen goes in that day. Think of what the Torah says. The Torah says there's some days you don't go. Some days you push it off, a chos, and you wait till after Shavuot, then you go to have a look at the teras. So the Chazanish says, why do we need a pasuk for it? The Torah doesn't say that you have to look at the teras today, tomorrow. There's a whole parsha of teras. The Kohen has to examine the teras. So he should make up his own mind. He should figure his own seichel to say, I have to go today. I'll do other things today. I'll go 2, 3, 4 weeks, then I'll take care of it. There's no mitzvahs. All right. So the mitzvah of being mitzvah chos and kala pushes aside the rizos. So the Chazanish says that you see from this mitzvah, from this pasuk, that when the Torah says to do something and doesn't say when to do it, doesn't say matzah on the 15th of Nisan, doesn't say sukkos on the 15th of Tishrei, and doesn't say kovet Shabbos and Shabbos, says just do it. So then if I don't do it right away, it's as if I'm not doing the mitzvah. The example the Rambam gives, if a child is already, a boy is already 8 days old and doesn't have a bris, so then the parents are mevatel the mitzvah. Not the mitzvah, they'll do it the 9th, 10th, 12th, right? The child's healthy, he can do it. So the boy is 13 years old, doesn't have a bris, so then he's mevatel the mitzvah. How can we have the mitzvah? He'll do it in 2 months, 3 months. So the Chazanish says, no, there can be such a thing as being mevatel a mitzvah and being mekayim a mitzvah. You can have both. But that shows you the significance of not doing a mitzvah where there is no time pressure per se. So again, but that's what we're looking at. When a young couple, when a couple's first married, or when a couple doesn't have a child yet, correct, doesn't have a child yet, and they want to postpone having their first child, they don't want to not have children, they just don't want to have it right now, so then, what are we looking at? What's the concern? What the rabbi has to figure out? So they'll have their first child in 6 months, 7, 8 months, in a year. So the issue is, whether that's a violation of his reason, matim l'mitzvah, is it a violation of the heder mitzvah of doing mitzvahs as soon as possible? But then again, so that becomes the obligation, and then the rabbi has to figure out whether the particular needs of that couple override the mitzvah's rizos. So obviously health issues would override, and obviously if we're concerned about the health of the fetus, it would override. There are even posts, I don't want to quote them because it's not in print yet, but there are even, let's say, a young couple doesn't have insurance yet. Something as mundane as that. It happens sometimes. A couple gets married and they haven't worked out the policies yet. Right? They haven't worked but many insurance policies will not cover a woman who's already pregnant. So several of my rabbis said that would also be a reason to postpone. Right? So it's a financial concern, a significant financial concern. So because we're postponing zerizos, It's very significant, it's very weighty, but again, there is some flexibility depending on what the concerns are. Let's say, Rachman Olzan, we're concerned that the family may not be a viable family. Let's say the Chassan and Kala are having a very difficult time, so we certainly would not introduce a child in that kind of situation, any kind of choli. But the question that usually comes up is the next step. After family has already started, and we already have one child, maybe we have one child, maybe we have 3 or 4 or 5 girls, maybe we have 4 or 5 boys. So we're at halachically, we're in the same stage. We have not been mekanes of pivot ribya, right? So then the question is when allowed, what are the concerns when it comes to spacing a child? If we've already been mekanes of mitzvah pivot ribya, we have a boy and a girl, so then there's a mitzvah de rabbonon of having more children. We'll get to that in a moment. But if I haven't, if I don't have a boy and a girl yet, so I still have not fulfilled the mitzvah de'oraisa. So therefore I should be governed by the same rules that we just said. What does that mean? We should be governed by zerizin makdim and lemitzvahs. So a person has one girl, two girls, three, a person has one boy, two boys, three boys. So they are still governed by the mitzvah of zerizin makdim and lemitzvahs. They should still, so they allowed to have any space at all between the children. says that we're obligating any people to have children immediately, one after the other, until the Mekayim, the Mitzvah Deiraisa. So even though Al Pidin, we are in this, governed by the same rules as using the mitzvahs, but the practicalities are such that one is not required to have children immediately one after the other, that there is some room for spacing. What is that based on? So it's based on the health of the mother, right? How do we evaluate the health of the mother? So the Gemara says, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that as long as a woman still feels, the mother still feels the postpartum effects, so then they are in the category of a chola, a person who's not well. A person who's not well does not have to push themselves to mekayim's rizus. A person who's not well may have to push themselves to do mitzvahs, right? But what we're saying over here, let's look at it, so that's what we're evaluating. The woman is saying, I don't feel well yet, all right? A person who's a chola doesn't feel well, so is allowed to postpone zrizin matim lemitzvah. They're allowed to postpone doing this as soon as possible. What does it mean not to be well? So as long as a person is not fully functioning, that means they're not back to their regular schedule, then they're in the category of a chola. So as long as a person is, the Gemara uses the phrase, nesparke reha, that a woman feels, she still feels the postpartum effect. That would certainly be, I usually also suggest that as long as a person is not sleeping through the nights, so they could not have their strength back. A person doesn't have a regular night and sleeping through the nights, that's also part of coming back to one's strength. So as long as a person is not back at their pre-pregnancy strength, then one's allowed, even on the mitzvah deraisa, to postpone the mitzvah deraisa of zerizus. Question then, what if a couple says, mother feels well, Baruch Hashem, she's back at her pre-pregnancy strength, so, but she thinks it would be better for the children to have some kind of space. So is that a factor that one takes into account? So there's a very, very strong and sharp debate between Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Henkin was one of the great Gedolim that came to America. I think he was Nifter in the 70s. And he was an unusual tzaddik and Gedol of Yisrael, lived in the Lower East Side. And Rav Moshe Henkin locked horns in a few things, not that many things, locked horns in a few things. Rav Henkin was the head of Ezra's Torah. He was head of the stock organization Ezra's Torah, and he was such an unusual tzaddik that he saw himself as being an employee of Ezra's Torah, and all day long he was getting questions from all over the world because he was one of the Gedolei Yisrael. So whenever he'd get a question from whenever he got off the phone and didn't relate to the stock organization Ezra's Torah, he would write down how much time it took away from Ezra's Torah. And he would make up that time towards Ezra's Torah. So, in fact, much of our, we don't realize it, but the luach that every shul uses, the luach that we have, in terms of Menhagim, and so Rav Henkin was the one who put that the luach together. So he's quoted as saying two things. He's quoted as saying that one is allowed to space between children for several years. And he didn't explain this, but his grandson, Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin, wrote in the Sefer that he explained that the Gemara is certainly in favor of a woman nursing, of a mother nursing. And the Gemara says that as long as a mother nurses, a mother cannot, that was certainly the way that it was until recently, that as long as a mother was nursing, she would not be able to conceive, and we would even allow her not to conceive as long as the baby was dependent on the mother's milk. So Rav Henkin suggests that since theoretically a mother can nurse for several years, so that means that, and why is the mother nursing for several years? Because the mother feels it's better for the child. So it's better for the child at hand to be nursed for several years. That allows me to postpone having another child. He says if that's the case, one shouldn't be allowed to space for several years. Rav Henkin writes, if Yehuda Herzl, the grandson, writes, but that's only if the Rav Henkin was only so liberal if the mother was really using this time for the child. That if the mother is using the time, the space in between, to pursue a career, to pursue further education, so he said that wouldn't be a reason. That's not doing anything for the necessarily for the immediate well-being of the child. So therefore, he thought that that's an approach, an idea we have to keep in mind and we have to work with. But it doesn't. It's not a blanket approach that one allows significant spacing. And then there was a very significant, a very sharp exchange between Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe Feinstein about a second statement that was attributed to Rav Henkin. Rav Henkin wrote that that in Europe he thought it was fairly common that people space for 2 years in between children. And Rav Henkin's approach was that, again, this is the second quote of Rav Henkin, that while a woman is nursing, she's in the category of a choli. She's in the category of a person who is not fully well, because she is using her energies also to provide milk for the child. And sometimes, for certain issues, we would evaluate a woman to be seen as a choli shein basakana, even for 2 years after having given birth. It's very, very rare. Usually for fast days, while a woman is nursing. But for some rare situations, there are some minority views that would allow a woman, to skip a less significant fast day within 2 years of giving.